From the Annals of Thoracic Surgery and the Society of Thoracic Surgeons, welcome to Beyond the Abstract, part of the Society of Thoracic Surgeons Surgical Hot Topic Series. I'm Tom Varghese, a thoracic surgeon and deputy editor of digital media and digital scholarship for the Annals. This is a podcast all about the why behind articles and issues in cardiothoracic surgery and healthcare, and what are the planned next steps from authors and thought leaders in the field. We're glad that you are here. If you enjoy our program, please rate our podcast on iTunes or Google Play or wherever you downloaded this podcast. Your feedback is appreciated. Please remember, the opinions expressed in this podcast are that of the individuals and not necessarily of STS. Better outcomes for patients undergoing surgical procedures is a good thing. Measuring and improving the quality of healthcare is naturally an increasingly important goal in American and global medicine. Patients and their families request information on outcomes, payers require health systems to address variations in quality of care, and credentialing agencies demand evidence that hospitals meet performance standards. The debate is not on why we should do this or what objectives we wish to achieve. The debate is on how we set forth to accomplish better care for all patients at all times. The more complex the surgical intervention, and the more complex the patient, the more processes that are needed to ensure timely, accurate, risk-adjusted outcomes in a database. Amidst this background emerged two novel databases in the arena of mechanical circulatory support: the Interagency Registry for Mechanically Assisted Circulatory Support, also known as INTERMAX, and the Pediatric Mechanically Assisted Circulatory Support Database, which is also affectionately called PEDIMAX. What makes these databases unique are the stakeholders involved in their genesis. INTERMAX was established in 2005 at the University of Alabama at Birmingham as a joint effort among the National Heart, Lung, and Blood Institute, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, or FDA, the Centers for Medicaid and Medicare Services, or CMS, national leaders from hospitals, clinicians, and scientists, and the medical device industry. INTERMAX was thus designed to acquire and deliver to all stakeholders risk-adjusted data on the clinical outcomes of patients who received an FDA-approved mechanical circulatory support device to treat advanced heart failure. PEDIMAX developed in parallel for the pediatric population. In the past 5 years, INTERMAX and PEDIMAX data have been used in more than 60 peer-reviewed publications, provided clinicians critical and timely information on morbidity, mortality, functional capacity, and health-related quality of life in adult and pediatric patients who underwent mechanical circulatory support in the United States. In January of 2018, both databases formally became the fourth component of the Society of Thoracic Surgeons database efforts, joining the adult cardiac, general thoracic, and pediatric cardiac efforts. On today's episode, we speak with Dr. Robert Kormos, cardiothoracic surgeon at the University of Pittsburgh and the Brack-Hattler Chair of Cardiothoracic Transplantation there, who also serves as chair of the INTERMAX Task Force under the Workforce on National Databases for the STS. We are also joined by Dr. David Morales, congenital heart surgeon at Cincinnati Children's, a pioneer in the world of pediatric ventricular assist devices and a champion of the PEDIMAX efforts. This year, for the first time, the annual reports from the INTERMAX and PEDIMAX databases were published in the Annals of Thoracic Surgery in February and April, respectively. In today's episode of Beyond the Abstract, we are joined by these thought leaders, where we will deep dive into their efforts and discuss thoughts about the future. Welcome, Dr. Kormos and Dr. Morales. My question to you, Dr. Kormos, is, how did this collaboration really come into play? I mean, we don't really hear about these unique collaborations working amongst different agencies within the government. But your thoughts on the effort, Dr. Kormos?
Well, it is an interesting story that begins really about the year 2000, when out of necessity, the Food and Drug Administration came to some of us in the field of mechanical circulatory support and, together with industry, asked us to develop standardized adverse event definitions and, in fact, a registry to track the utilization of mechanical circulatory support. So we began a registry through the International Society of Heart Lung Transplantation, and about a year or two into that, we were approached by the NHLBI that was creating an RFP for a national registry in the United States. And we applied to that RFP and were awarded that through a collaboration with the University of Birmingham in Alabama with Jim Kirkland and others to develop this database. And really, it was something that was a novel relationship with the Food and Drug Administration, Medicare, and the NHLBI, because payment for this device, the utilization of this device, was still being determined, and the indications for use were still being determined. But more importantly, a standardized format of collecting information that could then be provided to the Food and Drug Administration as well as to CMS, Medicare, for interpretation of clinical trials was really, to this point, restricted to industry data. So the goal of Intermax really was to help refine patient selection and to maximize outcomes with the current set of devices at that time and any new device that would come along. And part of what we were trying to do by collecting this information is develop predictors of good outcome as well as risk factors for adverse events. And ultimately, the vision for Intermax was to develop best practice guidelines that would improve clinical management and reduce the complications of utilization. We also thought that this registry would eventually lead, through its tracking mechanisms of device malfunction and other events, as a way to improve technology. And we hoped that we would serve as an early warning system, so to speak, that through clinical data collection, we would be able to advise the Food and Drug Administration on sentinel signs that we were seeing in the use of these devices.
That's incredible. That's amazing. But go ahead, Dr. Combs.
Well, so along the way, there was a tremendous amount of work that had to be done because nothing had been really created in such a longitudinal fashion. There were certainly registries that had been developed that looked at initial hospitalization outcome in the first 30 days of a procedure, but nobody was really tracking outcome based on the length of use of the device or the life of the device in the human being. So we had specifically designed this registry, which is now a database, and designed it to collect this information not only from the time of initial implant, but the risk factors preceding implant, and then also all the adverse events, the readmissions, and indeed quality of life metrics and patient-reported outcomes were all part of this registry right from the beginning.
Yeah. No, I guess one of the questions then for you, Dr. Kromos, is do you think it was the cost of these devices that was one of the motivating factors in contrast to, because this is such a phenomenal, robust framework that one would make the argument that we should be doing this for all new devices that are introduced in the market, but you and I both know that's not the case. This just seems like it's a very unique outlier, a good outlier, but it just seems like an outlier as compared to the way we introduce new technology in all other fields of expertise.
Well, so I think part of the challenge here, although cost is certainly part of this, so cost-benefit is a big part of using this type of technology, that wasn't the motivation per se. It really was to better understand how we could use these devices and produce the best outcome possible, given the population was so ill and had so many comorbidities going into this procedure. So to understand that process was a real challenge, and we weren't getting that data from industry.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. So we have this noble effort at the base, at the start. And obviously the manuscript that just got published out in the Annals of Thoracic Surgery really talks about the journey that Intermax has had till date. In your opinion, and Dr. Cormos, do you think that it's achieved all its goals in its first 5 years of existence?
Well, you know, it has achieved a lot of the goals. I think we have a few targets yet for improvement that I can certainly discuss, but I think one of the things that it did is it provided data to investigators and to hospitals to better understand outcome in this field. This data has proven to be of great use for regulatory bodies that look at hospital programs for their performance, such as the Joint Commission. It has become the standard for data reporting for that that process. Indeed, for a large part of the mechanical circulatory support trials, until the Medicare approval status was deemed for this device, Intermax was deemed necessary. It was mandatory for sites to put the data in. So that provided a wealth of information. But I think, you know, if you look at our progress, I mean, this database has been the source of a tremendous amount of research in the field. There've been, you know, numerous publications in key journals that have improved the field considerably. Our registry was one of the first to notice certain complications with mechanical circulatory support that led the FDA and then further industry to change its practices as to how these devices were utilized. I think there's a certain amount of information from Intermax that has become extremely useful to cardiologists to help them make decisions about the timing of implantation and patient selection. So I would say yes. Where we have to make some improvements, and this is where the STS and Intermax provides a tremendous opportunity for a partnership, is in the STS's ability to provide us with the framework to develop quality metrics and patient-reported outcomes. We have aligned ourselves closely with other task forces within the Workforce of National Databases to help develop risk-adjusted metrics and scores that by which we can compare our information to a standard in the country that is matched for the type of patients that we're implanting in our institution. This has never been available in this field. So that is a goal that is a priority for us that I think the STS will definitely help us achieve.
Beautiful. I think that one of the things that a lot of people expand upon, or they verbalize, that a potential way of controlling costs or ensuring that there's optimal resource utilization is this concept of public reporting. That's kind of the buzzword you and I have heard about in many meetings and strategic sessions over the years. Do you think that Intermax is really going to continue on the journey where it could potentially be the optimal database for public reporting for those patients that receive these devices?
Well, a simple answer is yes, I think it can, but there's a number of conditions that I think have to be met, and I think it's important to understand that this data is voluntarily entered into the database, and I think uniformity and auditing of the data, as has always been important for Intermax, now has to take even a more serious level of scrutiny as we use this information to report outcomes in centers. And this speaks very highly of the amount of work that we're going to have to do in risk adjusting our data so that it adequately represents reality of performance in hospitals. But I do believe that public reporting is going to be necessary. Now, once again, we have a very unique situation because our metrics for public reporting can take on many different flavors. certainly paired outcomes of survival adjusted for certain complications such as stroke and bleeding and readmission are going to be important. But we have to understand that not only are we going to be able to provide a reporting structure on the initial hospitalization, which, as we know, is the most costly part of this process in therapy, but also post-discharge for the life of the patient on the device, we're going to have very interesting long-term metrics that I think haven't yet been developed anywhere. This is a whole new era for us.
Absolutely. I think that, as you said about the whole new era and the whole new interactions with these novel database, in your opinion, Dr. Kromos, do you think that there's a certain skill set or skill sets that we need to start learning as surgeons or as young faculty members start embarking on their career in terms of interactions with these type of database? I guess I'm just really asking you your kind of thoughts of now reflecting back on, it's been 5+ years now with Intermax. Is this kind of a sign of things to come in terms of these type of novel databases and the skill sets needed to really understand the use of these databases?
So I think, you know, there is a distinct opportunity here to look at novel ways of examining the data. And we've had some early experience, for example, using machine learning approaches to the Intermax data that is revealing some interesting things about adverse events or complications. Such as these are not all attributable to the device, which is currently how they're being reported. Some of these events come with the patient. You know, they are pre-existing. Some of the events are due to management. And I think we're going to learn more using some of these novel statistical approaches about how to put these complications, which are very important, but how to put them in perspective. And I think that is a huge opportunity for the future. I also think that what we haven't done yet that we need to do with this is make this useful for the clinician, the nurses, the cardiologist, the team in the hospital to be able to look at their information in real time, and to produce quality challenges and solutions. You know, you'll hear soon from the PDMax folks who have actually developed a mechanism that allows them to indicate what sites have the best results and then look at their practices and then translate those practices to sites whose outcomes aren't so good. And I think if we can do that, we've achieved, I think, one of the major goals of having a registry, which is to teach sites how to improve.
Dr. Morales, would you like to tell us a few words for our listeners, a little bit about yourself and how you got involved with this initiative?
So my name is David Morales. I am a congenital heart surgeon at Cincinnati Children's, and I have been interested in mechanical circulatory support for children probably since training at Columbia Presbyterian Hospital. After that, I went to Texas Children's Hospital and was there during kind of the beginning of pediatric VADs, which I usually stayed in North America, was about 2004, because in that year was really the first time a significant number of Berlin X-Core VADs were used, as well as it was the first time that the U.S. government gave money to the field to develop pediatric VADs.
So, that is amazing. Go ahead and keep going, Dr. Morales.
And since then, we've worked with Berlin Heart as X-Core, the trial, as well as multiple other devices. And during this, Dr. Bloom and I and Dr. Rosenthal were at the initial Intermax meetings. And during those, the leadership at that point for the Intermax realized how different the pediatric specialty was and that it would need its own type of registry. And so we were there to help start forming that registry, which came to be called PDMax.
Yeah, no, I think that that's a great segue. Obviously, for our listeners, PDMax, which stands for the Pediatric Interagency Registry for Mechanical Circulatory Support, came kind of similar to the adult Intermax, where, and correct me if I'm wrong, Dr. Morales, where it was a joint registry sponsored by the National Heart, Lung, and Blood Institute, but really brought, you know, clinicians and governmental agencies together in this effort, with PDMax being launched in 2012. But you made a good point that, you know, obviously children are not just small adults. I mean, that there's important differences and nuances and even within these registries. For example, in the article, there was a specific mention of how PDMax really focused on outcome data analysis by the patient level rather than the actual device type. Can you elaborate on the reasons why PDMax evolved in that direction as compared to Intermax?
Yeah, during the formation of PDMax, we realized that sometimes our patients, especially the congenitals, are a little more complex and sometimes require not only durable VADs, but temporary VADs. And we sometimes use those temporary VADs even in for longer periods of time. And because we saw at our developing field that many of our patients had two types or three types of VADs, we decided to base our analysis on the patient rather than the device. The other, you know, there are other things that make the patient population a little bit different. Nearly a quarter of our patients are congenital heart patients with congenital defects, including single ventricle physiology, which is much different than in Intermax, where less than 1% of all of the patients in Intermax are congenital patients. And so because of some of those differences, you know, some of even the adverse events that we follow and some of the kind of endpoints that we look at are slightly different.
No, that all makes sense. Now, it says that PDMax, correct me if I'm wrong, the cutoff age usually is 19 years and younger. But does that mean that once you're enrolled in PDMax, you will continue to be enrolled in PDMax? So, for example, if a child has a VAD implanted and they're part of the registry, that even after the age of 19, they would still be continue to be tracked in PDMax?
So during the one hospitalization, they would be tracked in PDMax. But once they pass that threshold, then they would go into Intermax.
But we,
you know, the leadership of PDMax and Intermax really work very closely together. So when we have projects such as looking at adults with congenital heart disease or looking at adolescents and young adults, we can easily match and look at both databases to ensure that we're getting all of those patients captured in a project like that.
Absolutely. Now, you mentioned about adverse events, and specifically you had mentioned that there are some adverse events that only occur in the pediatric population that doesn't occur in the adult population. But since adverse events as a group is a huge burden or a significant burden for children undergoing mechanical circulatory support, in your opinion, as you've seen the evolution of this database, have you seen practical use of these devices, do you believe that only a select group of centers should perform these procedures, or is it one of those things where as long as they participate in the registry and they're able to track their outcomes, that would be fine? I mean, what are your thoughts about that perspective?
So I do believe that that focusing this type of strategy or therapeutic strategy meaning the devices, and it's not really the devices, obviously, but the team it takes to take care of them in centers that can do so. Having said that, it is very difficult sometimes to, you know, people aren't going to transfer across, you know, hundreds of miles. And to think there's only going to be 3 or 4 centers doing this, or 8 centers, is probably not correct. So it's an exciting time for the pediatric community, because we were looking at, you know, if we look at all of the centers doing it, which estimates in the report there's 30, but really there's about 40 or so centers that perform pediatric VADs at pediatric institutions. And what's most exciting, like if you look at all of those centers and then you look at all of the morbidity at any one of their centers, for example, such as stroke, you can see that the centers have a large kind of spread of the percentage of stroke they have. And so what we've done in the pediatric community is create a learning network called ACTION. And yeah. So what ACTION has allowed us to do, of which probably about 85% of pediatric VADs are now in this ACTION learning network, which is really a QI-focused network. Whereas PDMax is a registry, this is a much more nimble kind of working situation in which the groups get together and say, okay, who has the lowest stroke rate and why is that? And looking at best practices. And then when the network believes they found the best practice, everybody in the network decides that they will become... will adopt those practices in terms of anticoagulation, how you deal with blood pressure, how you communicate with the ICU, all of these kind of three-tier approaches to addressing stroke. And this ACTION network, you know, one of our first things was to look at stroke and how we could reduce stroke across the country and across all of these things. And with that, we can learn from each other. And again, the problem is that in any one institution, they might only do, so the average institution, if you see in the report, does less than 10 VADs. So yeah. If you're doing less than 10 VADs, you know, just, and you have to imagine that our patients have so many different diagnoses, and there's perhaps 2 or 3 different VADs that you use, you can only imagine how little experience you get with any one patient group. However, together, we're 300 patients.
Yeah.
And what we've demonstrated is that we can make significant changes in outcome in a much shorter period. And doing this, we've decreased, for example, the amount of the Berlin X-score at times gets exchanged. So we've decreased that by 60%. And we have, our initial outcomes data is demonstrating that we've decreased the amount of stroke across the network by 50% or more. So I think that's an answer to your question, that I think if we work as one group, that we can provide very good VAD care across multiple institutions at a very high level.
Yeah, no, that's an amazing thought process, an amazing collaborative that's come together. I guess in the amount of time that we have left, the question for you, Dr. Morales, is that now that you've participated in this and you've had this phenomenal experience and you've had the track record coming through, it almost seems that the surgeon of today needs a new skill set to really robustly take care of our patients. And what I mean by that is not just the technical skills of one patient at a time, but really participating in these thoughtful registries and then hopefully doing the ongoing real-time learning and quality improvement. Is that a correct way of summing up where you think that the field is going in the future, or any other thoughts that you would have about that?
Yes, I think, well, if you're asking about in particular in regards to pediatric VADs, I think that's going to be an essential thing for surgeons to participate in these quality or these learning networks so that we can learn best practice. And what's best about this learning network, it also happens to have an open forum. So when places are dealing with a difficult patient, they basically put that question out to this open forum in which we all get an alert and can respond to. So in real time, within an hour or two, an entire conversation can go on from multiple institutions to how best take care of that patient in that institution and recommendations. So I think it's a very powerful thing in that places that don't put a lot of devices but have a patient that they can't transfer, how do they give the best care? And, you know, through this network, we can help provide that care for them. And so I do think it's a very important thing for surgeons to be involved in this, for those that are experienced, but really for those who are just starting out, it's just as important. And what is amazing is that you learn, whether you're experienced or not, every time you enter in one of these live kind of ongoing conversations about a patient in another institution.
Do you envision... I mean, this is obviously was approaching a high-risk group, you know, children who need, you know, mechanically circulatory support. But do you envision this kind of framework also expanding to maybe intermediate and low-risk procedures as well? You know, this ongoing real-time learning and the networks, the robust registries, in essence, that you've described?
I think it can. I think the learning networks make the most sense for a therapy where there's low volume and high risk.
Yeah.
So where it is very difficult for any single institution to get enough experience by themselves or for multiple institutions to do that. So there are many examples for that. For example, the total artificial heart. That is something that I think has a lot of usage, but no institution, especially a pediatric, puts in more than a few, one or two or three a year, and really across the country, even in adult centers. And so how do you learn, and how do you gain experience, and how do you gain confidence with that device? And it's only through sharing. You know, people often talk about, you know, competition drives people to get better. But at some point, competition reaches a limit and cooperation is where you get to the next level. And I think with these devices or therapies that, again, are low volume, high risk, it is only through cooperation can we get better outcomes.
No, that's amazing as well. Dr. Morales, any final thoughts or about the future or any final thoughts about the initiative?
So the one thing about this year's PediMax report, which is exciting, is that obviously the pediatric community, VAD community, is much smaller in terms of the people doing it, but also obviously the number of patients we have. And this was the first year where we had over 500 devices and over 400 patients, and we could start doing some statistical analysis of hazard modeling, or basically looking at risk factors. And it was a year in which, although it had been proven in adults, again, demonstrating that patient selection is so important, and making sure that when we place that device, the patient has a chance for success and a good outcome. And, you know, as we continue to go forward, I think the pediatric community now is starting to develop true risk factor models of what patients will be best served by this therapy. And this was really the first year that we could actually start investigating that.
Dr. Cuomo, now that you've had the experience and you're leading these efforts, your thoughts on not only Intermex, but, you know, from a global perspective on where we are as a field and the path ahead. Any thoughts on how things are going to be coming down the pipeline?
Well, I think there's an important part of this that we haven't really touched on. And as you know, the Food and Drug Administration is now working closely with European and Asian agencies to create platforms that are more homogeneous and more translatable, I guess you could say, in how these devices are being tested and developed. It is probably crucial at some point here, once we develop our own standards internally here, is to work with other societies across the world to engage surgeons and cardiologists across the world to get that data into a format that we can then add on top of our data and better understand uses, better understand outcomes. So I think that's going to happen. I do believe the field is going to change rapidly. I think there's a real desire to see new technology that is going to be implanted, that is going to reduce the rates of infections and other complications. And so our charge is to become and stay flexible as these devices and practices change so that the database and the registry become a living registry so that we can make changes as we see them. And they're going to happen within the next 3 to 4 years. We're going to see a lot of novel new devices.
Thank you both for your thoughtful and informative insights. Dr. Morales, in closing, reminded all of us that the work in Intermax and PDMax is a result of collaborative efforts. For example, PDMax is a reflection of the work of the ACTION Network among pediatric cardiologists, such as Dr. Angela Lortz at Cincinnati Children's, in addition to cardiothoracic surgeons in the field, as well as other stakeholders. All of them are united in their efforts to foster relationships in the community and improvement in patient care. So once again, both Intermax and PDMax work because of this collaboration. Join us next time as we continue to explore and debate issues beyond the abstract, part of the Surgical Hot Topic series. You can connect with the Annals of Thoracic Surgery online at annalsthoracicsurgery.org or on Twitter at annalsthorsurge.